Inside?
Inside. Out?
Out.
Inside out.
Inside out.
Inside out.
Out? No, no. Inside out?
No, inside out.
This is Inside Out. I'm Ryan Egan, and it's a very windy day here in Port Moresby for the 29th anniversary of independence for Papua New Guinea. And the Hiri Moale Festival is in full swing as part of the celebrations. It's a colourful 4 days of traditional customs, music and dance. Hiri means trade, and it was at this time of the year that the Lagatoi canoes sailed out on their Hiri voyages. The women of the villages would stay inside while the men were away, and the young women would learn their Motuan customs while being tattooed. When the Lagatoi returned, the women would come out into the sunshine, displaying their tattoos and singing welcome songs. Much of this tradition has been preserved in the Hiri Haninamo quest. Each year, 20 women participate and are judged over 4 days on their dancing, tattoos, ceremonial clothing, and knowledge of traditional custom. I popped down to the first day of the Hiri Moale Festival here in Port Moresby and spoke with one of this year's Hiri Haninamo contestants. So I'm here at the stadium. The Hiri Moale Festival has just started today, and I'm speaking to one of the Miss Hiri Haninamo contestants for 2004, Esther Siaka. Thank you for speaking to us on Radio Australia. And are you very excited about today?
Yes, I'm very excited.
Which village are you from, or whereabouts in Port Moresby are you from?
I'm from Elevala Village, Hanobada, the Poreporena Village, the big name of Hanobada, Poreporena, but there's a different parts of the village. I'm from Elevala Village.
And had anyone in your village entered before in the Hiri Haninamo?
Yes. Miss Bunny Bao. She was Hiri Queen. She was the first Hiri Haninamo for the Hanobada Village.
What's your costume and what have you got in your hands there?
I'm holding a shell. This shell is important for Motuan people. This shell is used for bite prize and for dancing also. Grass skirt is made up of a string, the bush strings. The feathers is made out of a bed. It's made out of a bed. So this is used for the big ceremony. So that this is used for dancing, to girls to wear and then show to our people that this the traditional clothes.
What's in store for you today on Thursday, Esther?
Oh, I'm just introducing myself to everybody that why I attend this question. Like, I want to show that I have a culture. So, my culture. Here's a Motukoita Gwendota. I want this to continue in years to come so that new generations can see, so they can follow.
Has it been very hard to learn all the customs and everything about what you're wearing? And?
Yes.
But you're enjoying learning about this?
Yes, very enjoying. And I'm very excited to know. While I'm growing up, I have to know the meaning of all the traditional things.
And how old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
And what do you do normally in your day-to-day life, for work or for study?
Schooling. I attend Hola Youth Development Centre. I study computing and secretary.
What will happen if you win Hiri Haninamo 2004?
I'm very happy if I win. You know, I'm very proud myself that I won that quest.
And it's a long year ahead though if you win, isn't it?
Yes.
Will you have to put your study on hold?
Yes.
Well, I guess that's okay. You seem very excited.
Yes, I'm very excited.
I think you might have to get ready now. It sounds like people are getting moving. So thanks for talking to us, Esther, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Imana Konesio, thank you very much for chatting to us on Inside Out. You're a participant in the Hiri Haninamo quest in 1994, and you were successful as well.
Yes, I was. It was a pretty exciting time, something that you don't get to get yourself involved in, and it was quite an experience, yeah.
How did you become involved in the quest?
I had the opportunity of being asked by our village elders to take part, mainly because at the time that I participated, my village was given the task of building the Lakatoi. So therefore, with our input into the festival, it was only fitting to also have an entrant in the quest, and they asked me if I could enter, and I accepted the offer, and I contested with, I think, about 16 or 17 other girls from the various villages, and I got myself involved. Very, very arduous task of entering, mainly because it's a cultural event, and that in itself is difficult because I've had to try to grasp the various cultural aspects of my society and being able to learn about it and be able to be a model or a role model for other young Motuan women. So that in itself was quite a task, yeah.
So it was a long build-up to the actual quest then for you?
Yes, I actually had about 2 to 3 months preparation. I had to sit down with my grandmothers and my aunts, mainly on the cultural information, getting it from the elders. Importantly, I had to know how to be able to dance. I also had to learn details about the various the Bilas, and also learn about the history and the intricate details about the tattoos. And also importantly about the hiri trade, because that's what the quest is centered on, the appreciation and the preservation of the barter system. So I had to learn a lot. It was a lot of mental preparation, not so much of physical, although I had lost weight, about 5 to 8 kilos in a week, trying to prepare myself physically and mentally to be able to take myself back some 100 years ago as to how the women were preparing themselves for this, and the task of waiting for the menfolk returning from the hiri trade. So I had to put myself into their shoes and be able to experience what they were waiting for. I'd probably put it like adrenaline rush sort of feeling, because it's something out of the extraordinary, because it's not all the time that you get to sort of learn about your culture in a matter of months.
It does sound very difficult. Were there points where you thought, I'm not sure if this was the right idea?
I had that midway through getting ready. I was telling myself that I wasn't mentally ready. I wasn't mentally focused on deliberating myself through this journey. There were times when I said, I don't even know the name of the wind. I don't even know the name of the Lakatoi. And what does this tattoo mean, you know, on my arm? And having to be forbidden from eating certain foods in order to prepare myself, I sort of had to like stop and really reflect on my purpose of entering, and the fact that I had elders and I had the whole village behind me, and it wasn't sort of to prove to anyone, but I really wanted to give something back, and from all the knowledge that I had grasped, I can't put this to waste. I've got to utilize as much as I can. And, you know, winning wasn't an option. It was just the participation that really drove me, determined to be able to achieve, lose or win, a feat that I could 10, 20 years' time, you know, I could tell my children that I participated in an event that's brought about cultural significance and also personal significance to myself as well.
You alluded to your tattoo a few moments ago. Can you describe what it does mean? It's on your right forearm there.
Okay. I got this tattoo done, I think 3 years after I had contested. And the relevance of the tattoo that I chose was, I told my grandmother, I wanted a tattoo that portrays togetherness, and the tattoo's also got to combine family, it's got to combine unity, and the way of life in the village. So I chose fish bones. If you look at bones of any sort of, you know, like object or thing, the bones actually hold a person or hold anybody together. And that's what I chose. So fish bones conveys the message of oneness, togetherness, unity. And that's something that is lacking in my society. People are sort of moving away from the fundamentals of society, and they're doing their own thing. They should incorporate and get together and be one. So that's basically why I chose that tattoo. And I tell you, it's very, very painful. But I think that you have to be really patient, and you've got to be a strong person to be able to handle the piercing of it. Yeah.
So the tattoos that you wore then at the quest, were they painted on?
Yes. In the quest, fortunately, you're not tattooed, on thorn. But in the quest, we use marking pen, but it's just as appealing as it is for the natural thing. But it's the closest we could get to a tattoo. But the tattooist, is got to be very, very patient and be stress-free, and to be able to paint on the tattoos really quite exquisitely. So, yeah, she's got to be someone that's so focused and so, you know, so sort of no sort of influence outside. She's got to be really, really, really determined to get, you know, the tattoos right, yeah.
So describe the days when you were performing and when you were being judged, I guess, for the quest.
Okay, during my time, it was a 4-day festival, and in this 4 days, it was mainly welcoming the arrival of the Lagatoi, and we were judged on that, on the dancing ability, and then we were all called in as a group and then judged individually. We're judged on our knowledge of our tattoos, our dressing, the hiri trade, and also just a little bit about the contestants themselves. So over that 4 day, it was just physically, mentally, emotionally demanding time that I had. I mean, getting sunburnt, I mean, I'm just got to be honest, being, naked, with a skirt on, the heat of the sun was just unbearable. I think the competitiveness and the drive from each of the girls was enough to say that, you know, just standing here is just really, you know, really, really difficult. The lead up to the crowning itself was, I was actually relieved when it was the last day. I couldn't wait for it to be over, because in the evening we had, there was a formal function. I think on the hour of the crowning, we were all standing in the blazing sun. And I just wanted to just have everything just announcement made, and everyone, you know, sort of go home and get all the tattoo markings off and put on a dress for, like, because I hadn't worn a dress and for like 4 days, and put on some civilian wear. But the announcement was truly something that I hadn't really expected. I had that, you know, possibility on my mind. Just what if
there's a chance that you might win?
A chance that I could get it. You know, how would I embrace it, and how would I handle, you know, being a cultural queen for the next 12 months and the responsibilities that I have to entail. And so that was something that I had to think. It was just then and there, just standing and just thinking about it. But I think when the announcement was made, I was just dumbfounded, and I had tears. It was tears of joy and a relief. But then at the same time, I had to think that, okay, you know, it's got to be another 12 months, you know, 12 months of my reign and this and this. So, yeah.
What were your responsibilities then?
The responsibilities are, well, in the next 12 months, we try to aggressively promote the Hiri Moale Festival as being the premier event in the cultural calendar of PNG. And I travel throughout each of the villages that I was designated to promote the purpose of the quest, why participation is important, and what benefits it caters for, not only for the individual individual contestant, but the community or the various villages they represent. So those were the main responsibilities. And, of course, the travelling requirements to Townsville, because Townsville is our sister city, and also be the spokesperson or the front person, the forerunner of the Hirimuale festival itself. A lot of people believe that it's a beauty quest, but beauty is defined in a cultural way, in the sense of our tattoos, our traditional finery, and our knowledge of the Hiri trade.
And the Hiri Hanenamo, how has that affected your professional life and your personal life in the time between when you won in 1994 and now in 2004?
I can say it as it's like a bonus. I believe that it hasn't altered me as a person. I'm still the same person I was 10 years ago. I've appreciated my culture. I've appreciated my society and my country. Then 10 years ago, absolutely no idea about my culture, no idea about people in general. So from then until now, I've grown into a more confident. I'm more appreciative and I'm more receptive to what's happening around me than I was then. Professionally, it's been, like I said, it's been a bonus. It's been a highlight of my CV. But it's always been that when they see the name or they hear the name and they see the face, and they just automatically, say, would you like to be employed here? And we'd like to give you, this package. And so it has its rewards. It also has its downside to it. I mean, like everything else, is a good and bad. But I try to embrace, life as much as I can, despite what goes against me and what goes for me, yeah.
If you were going to give any of this year's entrants, the women who will be part of the Hiri Hanenamo quest, any advice, what would you say to them?
It would be to really hold on to their cultural identity. That's important, because that's what's lacking in our society now. My motto when I entered in the Hiri Hanenamo, it's the word LAP, L-A-P, and L, I put it for to learn. Learn about your culture, learn about your identity, your heritage, where you come from. A is appreciate. I've appreciated my my culture. I've tried to embrace as much as I can, so that 20 years from now I'm able to tell my children or any relatives what I had experienced. And P is for preserve, and I've tried to preserve my culture by getting involved in the quest and also out of the quest, in everyday life, down the street, in the bus, at home, having a meal. It just makes you as a person, like it can complete you as a person. Yeah, so yeah, it's pretty much a part of me.
Thank you very much for chatting to us today on Soundcheck Manakorni.
Thank you, Ryan.
On Inside Out, I'm Ryan Egan. Let's have some music now from PNG. Here's a popular group called Houseboy with Naike. That's Houseboy with the song Naike from Diriman, a new CD of their tracks that I picked up during my visit here to Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. We're on Inside Out, it's time for our weekly sound check, and today we meet 22-year-old jazz pianist Aaron Chulai. Born in Papua New Guinea, Aaron spent his early years playing in the village, fishing, eating mangoes, coconuts and mud crabs. But he was exposed to a wide range of music too, from traditional Motuan morning chants to the songs sung around the table at Passover, as well as Beethoven, Brahms and Bach, played to him by his grandfather. After moving to Australia in his early teens, he discovered the blues and jazz. But the traditional music he heard as a child in Papua New Guinea is still very special to him. He recently released his debut album called Place, a jazz record brimming with youthful ideas and passion. Aaron Chulai took time out from his busy schedule to speak to me on Soundcheck. Aaron Chulai, thanks for joining me on Soundcheck today.
No worries, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about where you grew up. You were born in Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, born in Port Moresby. Went to Ella Beach Primary School for a while. My mother's Motuan, which is the people that originated in Port Moresby. And we moved to Australia in the late 80s, early 90s. And my dad's from Melbourne.
How old were you when you moved to Australia then?
Probably about 8 or 9. But since then, I've tried to go back to Port Moresby every year. Just all of my family's back up there and stuff, and it's definitely home for me.
Yeah. What's your first recollection of hearing or playing music when you're in Port Moresby?
Well, I mean, everybody in Port Moresby knows, or in Papua New Guinea knows, that music's a huge part of just daily life. And really the first music that I listened to was like local music, all the string band music that, my uncles and stuff would play that was sung in Motuan, and other bands, like more progressive bands coming out of the Papua New Guinean art school, bands like Sangoma and Clockwork Orange and people like that. And it wasn't until I moved to Australia that I sort of discovered jazz music and classical music and things like that, which is sort of the career path that I guess I'm headed down now.
When did you first discover jazz in particular then?
I started off playing guitar, and I auditioned for music high school at the VCA here. And for some reason, I decided to do the audition on piano. I'd just been playing piano for about 2 months or something. And when I got in, everyone else in that school was classically trained, and they gave me a teacher who was, would sort of make my technique, a little bit more up to standard or something. And so she introduced me a lot of classical repertoire to, just fine-tune my fingers. And through that, just naturally because, of the things that I liked about music, about improvisation and things like that, from classical music, I gradually moved in through jazz and through blues and all the rest of it. At home, around that time, I would have been listening to a lot of Miles Davis and a lot of Herbie Hancock and people like that. Also, as well as a lot of really old school blues like Robert Johnson and Howlin' Wolf and people like that. Really, the first pianist that really kind of inspired me to go down that path was Keith Jarrett. I think I really loved his music when I was about 14, 15. And then after that, actually, most of the jazz musicians I was listening to were actually Australian-based, like Paul Grabowski and Tim Stevens and Andrea Keller and people like that.
Because you were playing live in clubs quite young as well, in your teens too.
Yeah. Well, I started off playing guitar, like I said, and around 13, 14. I was working a lot as a blues guitarist around clubs. And it sort of took a while after I decided to change to piano for that to happen again. But around 16, 17, I was working like 5 nights out of the week pretty much.
You had an opportunity to record your CD, which is called Place, in New York. Can you tell me a bit about that?
I was playing in a club, Bennett's Lane, with a trio with Alan Brown and Gary Costello. And that time the Rolling Stones were in town. A saxophone player from the Rolling Stones, whose name's Tim Reese, who's like a really well-known session musician in New York, was sort of hanging out, and he came to the club and he heard our set. And I got introduced to him afterwards, and you know, he was in town for like a week, and we decided to do some playing and stuff, and we played that week, and he left for Hong Kong or something, and I got an email from him a couple of months later asking if I'd go to New York to do some gigs with him with this band that he was putting together at the Jazz Standard. So I flew to New York, which was around the time of my 21st birthday, and Tim and I just played a lot. And before I left, I'd spoken with Tim about possibly recording and doing some things. And so we ended up arranging a recording session, and I brought a lot of tunes with me. And we used guys like Clarence Penn and James Genus, who probably, you know, the best rhythm section in New York at the right now. And so we recorded the album, and we still didn't have a record label to put it out. And so Tim called up who he knew. And the day before I left, a company called Sunnyside Records decided to release the album, and I'm just about to record another one for them too in May next year.
So that opportunity doesn't come along that often,
no,
does it? You must have felt very lucky.
Pretty lucky, yeah. Yeah, and it was amazing. After that, like, I've spent quite a bit of time in New York just doing this and that. And like I said, we're going to be doing a live CD for Sunnyside in May next year at the Jazz Gallery, hopefully.
So was that a daunting time for you, being a young guy and suddenly having this exposure and this kind of travelling and things?
Incredibly. I mean, it was like, you know, these guys, I'd listened to their music for years, you know. And I remember walking to the studio and just being completely intimidated. And the whole time I was playing, it was just like this blur of white came across. And I was just like, I don't know, I can't remember much of it.
Where do you find your inspiration for your music? Where do you see inspiration? Where do you hear it from? What keeps you composing, and what do you think about when you compose?
I mean, obviously get inspired by other people's music. Like Paul Grabowski, like I said before, is someone I really admire.
He's someone who's also a big fan of yours as well, and wrote the liner notes for your CD too.
Yeah, yeah, well, Paul and I are actually quite close. He was actually my first piano teacher after I started playing guitar. Culturally as well, I guess, I mean, Papua New Guinea is a huge inspiration to me, you know, family and culture play a really big part in what I do, I hope anyway, I'd like to think so.
Is that a side of your playing and of your composing that you'd like to pursue? You've got a keen interest in particularly the string bands as well, don't you?
Yeah, well, Paul and I have talked quite a bit about me writing a piece for the art orchestra that's based around a Papua New Guinean mourning ritual called Kumaroho, which is a cycle of songs and dances that's performed to sort of end the mourning period after someone dies. I think it's 72 hours worth of songs and dances. So it's like, we've got to try and find a way to actually do it live. But that's something that I'd really like to do, especially with Paul and the art orchestra.
Do you find writing a difficult process? Do you find composing difficult?
I actually find it a lot easier than playing, I have to say. Playing the piano is much more difficult for me. Composing, I don't know, people do it in different ways, like, and it depends what you're writing for. I mean, I love sitting down and just seeing a tune on paper and just filling in the gaps and trying new chord sequences. And just, I don't know, I find it a lot easier than improvising, because you can take your time with it. It's not produced right at the moment, you know.
Would you ever perform in PNG? Is that something you'd like to do?
I'd love to. I've talked a lot to the Pacific Island Trades Commission based in Sydney about going up and doing some performances. But as you can imagine, it's a really expensive kind of adventure to go with a full band as well. So we've sort of looked at trying to do some performances with local artists as well. But and I'm sure that'll happen in the next 6 months to a year. I'm about to release a trio CD with Alan Brown and Gary Costello on the Move Records, and there'll be some stuff happening back in the US around April, May. I'm talking to a booking agent over there right now about arranging a few festivals in California and sort of around the East Coast as well, like close to New York, like Philadelphia. So we'll be touring and then hopefully ending with two dates in New York where we're going to record live for this next CD.
Well, it sounds amazing. I'm very jealous. And good luck with it all, of course. And thanks very much for joining us today on Soundcheck, Aaron.
Thank you very much.
21, a piece from the CD Place by jazz pianist Aaron Chulai. On Inside Out, it's time for the quiz. Well, the first clue for this month's quiz, this mesmerising sound that you can hear now, comes from the oldest known instrument dating back to at least 40,000 years ago. The second clue, this instrument was given its current name by the Europeans, who settled in Australia over 200 years ago, and before then, this instrument was known only to the Aborigines of Australia. And the third clue, contemporary specimens can be made of lengths of iron or even plastic piping, but the traditional instrument is made from the hollowed eucalyptus branch. In fact, it's a natural process. Termites nest in these malformed branches, eating the wood from the inside outwards. The question is, what is the name of this particular instrument? And the bonus clue. This track that you can hear at the moment is performed by Mark Atkins, one of the most renowned players in Australia. And it tells the story of two goannas fighting. The question, of course, what is the name of this particular instrument? If you know the answer, send it to Inside Out, Radio Australia, GPO Box 428G, Melbourne 3001, Australia. Or send us an email, insideout@ra.abc.net.au. And don't forget to write your postal address in the reply, otherwise we cannot send you the T-shirt if you win. On Inside Out, here's another CHM music release, this time from Aroma Coast in central province of Papua New Guinea. This is Kiki Geno. That's Kiki Geno with Ithe Oke Evene. And that brings us to the end of today's program. A big thanks to Mark and all my friends at the NBC and to the good folk at the ABC Port Moresby office who've made my stay here in Papua New Guinea so enjoyable. I'll be back in Melbourne next week for Inside Out. I hope you can join me then. I'm Ryan Egan, and until then, take care. See ya.